Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Unheard. I'm Freddie Sayers. During this difficult Ukraine-Russia conflict, it's hard to find voices that we can trust, information that we know to be secure. One person who we really hope will shed some light and unique insight onto what is going on is an independent journalist called Leonid Rogozin, who is Russian but has been a journalist for the likes of the BBC for many years and has recently left Russia, fearing, I suppose, for his personal safety. He joins us now from Latvia. Hi, Leonid.
Hello, many thanks for having me.
You've written publicly about how you got it wrong, about how you, what you thought would happen or would not happen, did, and that many of your assumptions you've now changed. So it was sort of honest and brave of you to talk about that. I wonder, could we rewind time for 1 month or 6 weeks and tell us what you thought the world looked like back then?
Yes, I was wrong about not envisaging, not believing that this invasion was going to happen, despite the United States government and American intelligence ringing alarm for 3 or 4 months since the early November. I guess there are two levels there. One sort of collective and analytical, another one is personal. At the collective level, I think I was no different from many Russian pundits, many experts in the journalistic community and in the think tank community, people who I still believe to be the best Russia experts, who did not believe in Putin doing it. My assumption is because they knew Putin too well. We assume that we know Putin's patterns. We know the logic of his behavior. We knew that he was becoming kind of increasingly menacing and increasingly unhinged. But still, anything he was doing, most things that he was doing, including the poisoning of Alexei Navalny and the intervention in Ukraine during Maidan Revolution, the occupation of Crimea, and how he launched the war in Donbass. That followed some logic, and it was bringing him, at least the intervention in Ukraine, it was bringing him very concrete political dividends in Russia. So what he did now defies logic, and it fundamentally defies our perception of Putin as a rational person. I mean, he's quite definitely rational. So basically, what happened is that we worked on the assumption that he's going to make a rational decision, that there is a game of escalation, and in this game of escalation, finally one of the sides in this game of chicken, finally one of the sides will shift and blink and go away. It will be either Putin or it will be the Ukrainians and their Western allies. But then they just collided full on. And yes, I couldn't expect this, and many of the other analysts couldn't expect this too.
What do you say to people who've been watching this for years and who think that it is rational in the sense that you know, he stated that the sort of NATO coming so close would be unacceptable to him. The kind of, you know, as he sees it, historic claims on that part of the sort of Russian sphere were always there. And you can find statements of his in the past that have kind of made quite explicit that this might be part of the plan. So is it so irrational and unpredictable, or has he actually warned us about it?
From the Russian perspective, and I don't think people appreciate it enough in the West, this war is the first and foremost fratricidal. Putin and everybody in his entourage understands this really well. And in that sense, this is quite suicidal. They are bombing Kharkov, a city located 400 kilometers away from Moscow on the Russian border, a completely Russian-speaking city, a city that has multiple connections with Russia. You can find all those videos on the internet of apartment blocks being bombed in Kharkov. And those apartment blocks, all those families and in their flats that have been bombed out, that have been burned, 99% of these families have relatives or friends or some kind of personal stories in Russia. To give you some examples, a pilot was captured by the Ukrainians today, and he told he was interrogated, and he told the name of the general who was ordering the strikes on Kharkov and places around Kharkov. And people checked out his biography, which is available online, and this general was born in Kharkov region. He was born in one of these towns, the town of Chuguyev, which he now orders to be bombed.
Right. So do you mean part of why you thought it wouldn't happen was the very closeness that Putin is talking about, that it's so inextricably tied into Russia, means that this kind of full-on assault you just thought was inconceivable?
Well, exactly. If you remember, and this has been very often quoted as an example of Putin's imperialism. He wrote this article in last summer where he basically stated that Russians and Ukrainians are one people. Well, by his own logic, he is now murdering his own people. And it registers with Russians. They're in Moscow, in St. Petersburg, everywhere around Russia. You have people born in Kharkov, born in Odessa, people who have grandparents, sisters, brothers in all those places. There's an element of political suicide there.
In those clips that are coming out on social media, you can almost sense that, with civilians approaching soldiers with a kind of familiarity and speaking the same language. And perhaps part of the reason they're being so bold with these soldiers, even though they're armed and in full combat gear, is there's a sense that they're from the same place.
Especially Ukrainians in eastern part of Ukraine where the fighting is going on, they have all been to Russia. They are all connected to Russia in this or other way. Completely unthinkable, unimaginable, and there is really no way Putin can sell it to Russians.
So the other reason that you were so skeptical, if we are still trying to kind of imagine where we were 6 weeks ago, was that you didn't have much confidence in US intelligence. And that's where a lot of these claims were coming from. They were being stated by US authorities without much proof that we have it on solid intelligence that an imminent invasion is planned, and you just didn't believe it. Is that fair?
Yes, exactly. I've been observing the Ukrainian conflict since 2014, since when it started. I was in Kyiv during Maidan Revolution, I watched the beginning of the armed conflict in Donbas in the spring of 2014. My initial premises were, looking back at it, I think I was not critical enough about the West and about Ukraine. I was in hindsight, I think I was a bit too enthusiastic about all those things, and it showed in my writing. I had this impression of the West being, you know, first of all, quite monolithic, and also a force of good. But then of course, with the Ukrainian conflict, it kind of gradually was becoming clear that there is this hawkish community in the US and Britain, which I don't want to be aligned with. Basically, there is a kind of lobbyist party in the West which lives in symbiosis with Putin's regime. They feed on each other anger and hatred, and they essentially promote conflict, promote escalation. It's not about equalizing them. The crimes, the war crimes committed in Ukraine now are squarely committed by Putin's dictatorial regime, and Western countries are democratic. And overall, I believe they are pursuing peace and democracy in the former Soviet Union. But it's complicated, and there are many different actors.
So because of that, then you felt that those reports coming out in the past year about this imminent invasion were maybe suspect,
particularly on the intelligence side. Influenced me. I guess, of course, I was. I had at the back of my mind, I had an Iraq dossier, which was basically false. And then as well, I had this whole Russiagate situation, which I knew much more about, and the Steele dossier, you know, the P tapes and so on. That influenced me.
Which were false.
Yeah, which were false, exactly. Yeah, and they were produced by, you know, people from the British intelligence and from the American intelligence, and then when you read about their sources, yeah, or these people who practically made it up, and who weren't any high level sources in Russia, they were just some guys of Russian origin based in America. So that's how it happened, and that influenced my assumption of this new intelligence material that was fed into the media by Biden administration. So it's a combination of factors. The idea of Russia invading Ukraine on this scale seemed unthinkable for the reasons that I described previously, and then the source of those ideas, those sources, opinion quite discredited.
And yet it turned out, Leonie, didn't it, that the British-American intelligence on this occasion was exactly right. I mean, it was stunningly accurate.
No, exactly. I'm extremely surprised by this. It's obviously it will change my perception. I want to know more about this intelligence, and historians or journalists will come up with something. I almost have a suspicion that Putin, the Kremlin, were feeding those plans to the Americans in their game of coercing Ukraine and making the Americans trying to get Biden coerce Ukraine into implementing Minsk agreements.
I mean, alternatively, I guess it's a sign that the Putin regime is cracking slightly, or that there are elements within it that are not loyal to Putin himself, and maybe they're the sources for some of this intelligence. Maybe there are really quite high-level sources within the Kremlin that are feeding the Americans this information.
Maybe, absolutely. We will probably learn about it, more about it in the next weeks, months, or years. There were some symptomatic incidents, like the way Putin treated the head of foreign intelligence, Naryshkin, at this memorable meeting of the Security Council, where he basically announced the invasion.
Yeah, he was looking unhappy, wasn't he? His facial expression was showing uncertainty, and Putin kind of slightly batted him aside, didn't he?
Well, yeah, it looked like he was not completely on board. And other officials, they were also dodging direct answer, and they didn't seem to be completely on board. So what's going on in this extremely non-transparent group of people who are making those criminal decisions on behalf of Russia and Russian people? It's an intrigue. It's very. I would like to know what is happening there.
So let's fast forward to kind of today, as it were. You've obviously been watching the events unfold on a day-to-day basis. What is your assessment now? What do you now believe to be the end game as far as Russia is concerned?
I don't really believe in Putin being, you know, a KGB guy as the fundamental pattern and fundamental feature of his psychology. He is more of a 1990s gangster type from St. Petersburg. And in this gangster world of the 1990s Russia, the main thing was to be well, as unhinged as possible in terms of in how you escalate. You have to go to the very limit, and you always have to outdo your rivals in this game of escalation. The Russian term for this is отморозок, someone who is frozen out, like someone who is devoid of any feelings. So many people
like a kind of poker. Poker game, almost, the poker face.
Yeah, quite a few people talk about Putin as someone who has no barrier of fear, somebody who can escalate endlessly just because he's not afraid of it, and that's a very dangerous psychological feature, especially when we are talking about a person who is in charge of one of two largest nuclear arsenals in the world. When he threatened this invasion in Ukraine, and I basically thought it was a bluff. He now threatens nuclear war. Well, I don't think I'm in position to say it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It is a bluff, no. It probably isn't. Especially considering the suicidal position he put himself on within Russia, within Russian society.
How far could he escalate? Then, do you think? I mean, obviously, there must be a limit at some point. I mean, one potential limit is the actual capability of the army on the ground in Ukraine. You know, if it continues to suffer the losses that are reported, it seems to be a very difficult ongoing campaign if they're planning to occupy the whole country. Is that one limit that he might come up against?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure he has a limit, to be honest. I mean, there is of course the limit With regards to what you mentioned, the cracks within the regime, and Putin is not alone. He's part of a group of people, and those people, they have different interests. And as those intelligence reports show, some of them might be even colliding with the West in some way. So who knows?
You mean that you think that one potential outcome is some kind of palace coup?
The regime, this political regime, grew out of conformism, and you'll find many people within the regime, particularly on the propaganda side, who were Democrats and liberals in the 1990s and well into the 90s. And Putin himself, I wouldn't call him an ideological person. If Russia were properly ushered, invited into the European Union and NATO in the late 1990s and the early 2000s, he would make a perfect bureaucrat, I believe. Just that in this fork, he chose to go that way. The West chose not to, you know, press on Russia being integrated. It decided that it would be better to get the neighbors of Russia on board, which led to, you know, Russia's alienation and isolation.
So do you think that was a mistake, can I ask? I mean, do you think that's the missed opportunity, that we should have actually invited Russia in back in the after the communist era ended?
Look, I'm not a historian. I'm seriously tempted now to kind of end my journalistic career and become a historian. A new sort of history expert, because I want to figure it out. It's a question for me. Yes, I do have a suspicion that the West contributed in a big way to turning Russia into what it is now, that it kind of created this Frankenstein that it is dealing with. One example that I can give is an article in Kommersant, an op-ed in Kommersant newspaper in 1999 by the then Moscow mayor, Yuri Lushkov, in which he said that he was talking about NATO expansion. And he said that NATO expansion will probably lead to Russia's isolation, to the emergence of authoritarian trends, to Russia basically becoming an authoritarian state. So back at the time, Yuri Lushkov was Putin's rival, and he was seen by Russian liberals and the West. He was seen as a hardliner, as an anti-Western hardliner, exactly because he was opposing NATO expansion. Putin at the time was seen as a liberal figure, as a protege of Boris Yeltsin. He was supported by Russian liberals. He was supported by the West. Who turned out to be right? It was Mayor Lushkov.
Looking forward, we are now where we are. The Russian army is within Ukraine. The West has responded with these huge punitive sanctions on the Russian economy and much else. What do you see as the kind of the next step? What should we be doing now? Do you feel like the Western response is the right one, or do you feel it's too strong or too weak? Or what would you like to see happen?
I'm seeing an extremely broad spectrum of possibilities. And outcomes that we could see in the near future, from totally apocalyptic to you know, quite positive. Instinctively, because my personal conviction is that there is the war is always the worst solution. There is nothing worse than the war, and any poor organized pieces is better than war. So instinctively, I would say we need to be looking for off-ramp for Putin and also for the Ukrainian leadership, which kind of also took part in this game of chicken and chose to put up a fight against Putin rather than agreeing to Minsk agreement.
What does that mean, though? Because at the moment, the European countries are sending lethal weapons to Ukraine, which obviously makes them stronger and more able to prolong and resist the Russian attack. Do you support that? Or are you of the view that that is just making things worse?
I was against that before the invasion started, because I was I was thinking that it would contribute to making the invasion more likely. I'm yet to analyze sort of whether that was right or wrong, and we will see whether it contributed or not. Putin claims it did. Now I'm seeing that it's not just the Ukrainian leadership; it's the entire Ukrainian society that that basically thinks that it should fight the Russians, and. On that, I think I'd basically show solidarity with the Ukrainian society. If they want it, then they, because as victims of aggression, I think they are right. They're right to do it. And therefore, if they keep fighting, they're fighting for a good cause, and then the West is right to supply those lethal weapons. To them.
In other words, we're now in a situation because the Ukrainian people want to fight and because they've been attacked, it feels morally right to support them with weapons, in which case that battle is going to go on for potentially a long time.
What we were lacking, basically, I think in the last 30 years since the collapse of the Soviet Union, we were lacking the West as an adult in the room. When it comes to the situation in the former Soviet Union. When former Soviet Union came out of this totalitarian prison, they were confused. I mean, especially the Russians, but Ukrainians too. I don't think the West was acting as an adult in the room during the role that was expected from it by the Russians, by the Ukrainians in the 1990s and now as well. I'd expect some responsibility, and I'm seeing it now. I mean, the way the French president is acting, the way some other Western leaders are acting, trying desperately to phone Putin as often as possible, trying to get a solution, talking to the Ukrainians, trying to fill out. Whether they would agree to some sort of settlement that wouldn't be satisfactory to them, obviously, but a kind of peace that wouldn't be satisfactory to Putin as well.
Presumably, the very minimum Russia would accept would be a redrawing of the map of Ukraine with eastern parts and maybe some other parts lobbed off. And maybe they'd want a change of administration. I don't think the Ukrainians are going to accept that.
Well, I guess both sides are have chosen to sit it out and see what's going to happen. The Ukrainians are hoping that the Russians would exhaust their resources, their military resources, their economic resources, that within Russia, thanks to the Western sanction, the economy will collapse and people will go into the street and protest this war. It could happen. I mean, that's a strategy. That's something to work with. On the other hand, the Russians are obviously hoping to capture the major city, to basically destroy the Ukrainian state and put the Ukrainians on their knees, oust the Ukrainian government out of Kyiv. It's quite obvious that the main attack, or one of the two main attacks, is focusing squarely on capturing Kyiv.
If that first scenario happens, which is obviously what the West hopes happens, which is that the military attempt is kind of gradually weakened, with it becomes sort of loss of morale among the troops, maybe there's a loss of political support for it within Russia as more people die, protests increase, and Putin's position becomes vulnerable. At that stage, what does he do, though? Is he more likely to escalate again? If what you say is right, that he is a kind of 1990s St. Petersburg gangster, and you put him in a corner like that, what does he do?
Yeah, it's a binary option. He might acknowledge that the force he is confronting is overwhelming, basically stronger. And then he might to start seeking agreement. Our problem is that we are not inside Putin's head, and we don't know how mental he is and how suicidal he is.
But let's just, as a thought experiment, let's fear the worst, and let's say that he does feel cornered, feels weak, he wants to double down again. What does that look like? That looks like letting off a nuclear bomb somewhere to show that he's willing to do that. Do you think that's a feasible potential outcome? And would the military even do that if he ordered it?
Basically, the answer from the military experts, from the nuclear weapons expert, is that nobody knows. And that's a bit of a scary thought. Maybe there is somebody else who is checking. Maybe not. Maybe it's Putin alone. It's a state secret. So we don't know there. We're dealing with some extreme uncertainties, which don't only concern the lives of Ukrainians and Russians, and concerns our lives in Europe, in Western Europe, in America as well.
Let me end by asking for your kind of personal reflection on this, because you were born in Moscow. You have been a kind of Western-facing correspondent for Russia and Ukraine for your whole career. You literally wrote the Lonely Planet guide to Moscow and Ukraine. These are places that you know and love. How do you feel seeing the changes that we've seen in the past few weeks? Are those worlds now gone forever, do you think?
Yeah, well, it would be honest to say that I'm mortally horrified by this whole thing. The very cities and towns that I was covering, like Kharkov or smaller places like Trastenets in northern Ukraine, they are either being destroyed by Russian aviation, or they are being occupied by the Russian troops. There are Russian flags there. So. For me, it's a brave new world, which I have no idea how it's going to play out, because there are far too many spontaneous factors and personal factors now. I don't think any of the historical patterns or political patterns that I know from my experience as a journalist, they quite apply here now in this volatile situation. The most tragic thing about Russia is that towards the end of Putin's regime, towards the end of what Russians know as Putin's stability, Russia was as close to the West in terms of lifestyle and in terms of the quality of life as it has never been before. It was in many ways a country. If you take away the political part, in terms of the structure of society, the texture of society, the lifestyle of society, and the culture, Russians were part and parcel of the globalized Western culture. In all these terms, Russia was completely ripe for integration with the West, more ripe than it was in the early 90s. When a majority of Russians were in favor of very close integration of the West, and when there was a chance for the West and Russia to basically avoid all those tragic situations that we are facing now.
So that's the 2000s you see as the kind of the decade which could have gone the other way.
Putin's two decades of Putin's rule are quite interesting, because the politics was deteriorating. It was becoming an increasingly more authoritarian state. But society was recovering from the totalitarian trauma and from the trauma of the 1990s. And it was the living standards were comparable to the poor parts of the Eastern European Union. Culturally, it was all, Netflix and coffee shops.
And now we've got Netflix has left. The luxury brands have left. Google, Apple no longer function within Russia. It's hard to see how that's going to come back anytime soon, isn't it?
No, exactly. So one of my friends wrote, "Hello, darkness." Hello, darkness, my good friend.
Leonid, it's a dark and bleak note to end on, but thank you for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you to Leonid Ragozhin joining us there from Riga. He is someone who has seen both sides of this conflict in the sense that he is deeply embedded in Russia and Ukraine. He literally wrote the travel guides to those countries, Western facing. He has worked for Western outlets like the BBC, but he also feels very close to his country of birth. And you can see there just how sad he seems about this, what he called fratricidal conflict, and the cities that he knows so well in Ukraine gradually being destroyed. A sad conversation, but I thought a really insightful one. So thank you to him for joining us. And thanks to you. This was Unheard.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.